As promised, we're joined right now by a Sports Illustrated legal analyst and writer. He is an attorney. He is the founding director of the Sports and Entertainment Law Institute at the University of New Hampshire Law School. He is the editor and co-author of the Oxford Handbook of American Sports Law. We consider him a friend of the program. He is Michael McCann. Michael, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks for having me back on.
Always good to have you on. Now, you've got a very good piece on SI.com that breaks down the lawsuit, Michael, against Antonio Brown. Let's start with the fact that it's a civil suit and not a criminal case that's been brought against Brown. Can you lay that out for us? What is the distinction and how significant is that distinction?
Yeah, it's a very significant distinction because it is a civil complaint, meaning that there's an allegation that he committed an act, a tort, and that ultimately this, if the complaint is successful, he would owe the accuser money damages. There's no probable cause of a crime, at least as far as we know. Certainly he hasn't been charged with the crime. There's no evidence that there's been a police investigation. It's really an accusation that, as we know, he has tried to rebut through his attorney. So it's a lower threshold. It's not nearly akin to the police charging him or him being indicted by a grand jury with an offense, and that means for the NFL, there's less to go on. It isn't as credible of an accusation, at least the optics of it, until the NFL is able to get more information. So this isn't like when Adrian Peterson is charged with the crime for child endangerment. This is really a much lower level accusation.
Michael McCann joining us. So certainly at this point, now, could it potentially evolve into a criminal matter?
It could. Because the Miami police are now aware of this civil complaint. It's possible they'll look into the accusations. I don't know how well they can investigate it at this stage because the incidents occurred in 2017 and 2018, at least the alleged incidents. But at a minimum, they could ask to speak with Brown and Taylor and try to at least get some information. She also referenced an unnamed football player in her complaint as being present when the alleged rape happened. That sort of jumped out to me that there's potentially another player out there who knows something, and I suspect at some point we'll figure out who that is.
Michael McCann joining us. All right, so taking all that together, Michael, as you reviewed the lawsuit, what kind of thoughts do you have overall?
Well, I think there's a clear sort of narrative, a telling of events from her perspective that tries to be logical, and that it's saying that he exploited a trainer-trainee relationship to sexually harass her and ultimately assault her, whereas his narrative is also pretty specific, and it frames her as exploiting that relationship, the trainer-trainee relationship, to try to get money from him for a business investment that Brown's lawyer depicts as kind of sketchy, and that the most importantly, that the sexual encounter that they had, and it's clear they both now cite the sexual encounter, that Brown claims it was consensual. So when I read that and then coupled with the rebuttal, we're left with really an accusation between two people. Now, her complaint does contain some electronic evidence of messages from him to her, at least purported messages. We don't know if they've been authenticated, but where he says some pretty bad things. That, though, doesn't prove that he committed rape. And I think we have to be cautious in linking sort of hostile messages with actual sexual assault.
Michael McCann joining us. I was going to ask you about the screenshots of the communication between he and her, and you just referenced that. One of the things, Michael, also that's been brought up is the fact that it appears that she did not go to authorities with the matter. What is your reaction to that?
Well, her telling of that, at least by how she implies it, is that she was so traumatized by what happened that it took a while for her to be in a position where she could come public with this complaint against Brown. That sort of the implication is that she wasn't in a position to go to the police after it happened because she was so terrorized and traumatized by it. Now, Brown's lawyer is going to say, well, you could still go to the police, but you've chosen to go through a civil lawsuit where your claims aren't yet investigated by law enforcement. She could say, well, law enforcement might treat Brown favorably because he's a celebrity and a famous player. I mean, there could be back and forth on that. But it may help Brown argue that if this was a truthful, fully truthful claim, that she would have alerted law enforcement. But she's going to say, I was so traumatized by what happened, I wasn't in a position to do that.
Legal analyst Michael McCann is joining us once again. So, Michael, the lawsuit itself, could something like this just come out of nowhere and be a surprise to Antonio Brown and the people around him? Or is a filing like this typically preceded by some sort of communication like a demand letter?
Yeah, absolutely. This was not a surprise. I'm sure the timing of the lawsuit may have come at an unexpected moment, though maybe they should have foresaw it, given that he's going to be playing the Dolphins on Sunday. But yeah, this would follow a demand letter where her lawyers write a letter to his lawyers saying, here's what we claim. We're open to reaching a settlement out of court before this becomes a public matter. Now, maybe when Brown, and I'm speculating here, maybe Brown's lawyers got that and said, this is frivolous, this is untrue, we're not going to give money to somebody who's claiming something that is untrue. Obviously, her and her attorneys view it differently. But, yeah, this would have followed the demand letter.
All right, so, Michael, the timing, I mean, that being what it is, the timing is such that Brown signs with the Patriots and then the lawsuit drops. So what, if anything, should the Patriots have known about this before they signed him?
Yeah, I don't know what the Patriots would have known about this. I think even if a team does due diligence into a player, it does a thorough background check, and I assume the Patriots did that, this wouldn't have come up unless they had a tip, because there was no, as far as we know, there was no police investigation. There was no civil complaint until yesterday. There was no other sort of law enforcement or legal proceeding related to this, as far as we know. So I don't think the Patriots would have known, or the NFL would have known. It wouldn't have come up in a typical background check unless they had a tip that this was coming, but obviously they didn't.
We're talking to Michael McCann for a few more moments. Now, Brown's attorney, Michael, has indicated that he will countersue. What would a countersuit look like?
Yeah, so you might think, a lot of people think, well, defamation. Defamation probably wouldn't be available because statements made in a legal proceeding usually are exempt from defamation. But a countersuit could involve a tortious interference claim, which basically says you, the complainant, are trying to interfere with my relationship with the Patriots and the NFL, and by extension, the NFLPA. This is sort of a business claim that there's an attempt to make someone's employment jeopardize somebody's employment. I suspect the claim would be along those lines, maybe fraud, but you know, there's a risk of bringing a countersuit because that expands the scope of pretrial discovery. So he may have to answer more questions under oath. He may have to share more emails and texts and the like. So there's always a risk to that.
Michael, what about the NFL? How likely is it, for instance, that Antonio Brown goes on the commissioner exempt list?
So right now, I think if the NFL only has a civil complaint, although it could put him on the exempt list because the league has a lot of discretion as to when a player goes on the list, doesn't take a criminal charge. If the league has reason to believe a player may have committed a violent act against another, I don't know if just the complaint itself is enough. And unless the league can somehow quickly corral information with the game a few days away, from what I understand, Adam Schefter has reported that the complainant will speak with the NFL, or at least has offered to speak with the NFL next week. Maybe he goes on the list after that. But at least at this point, although the NFL, again, it's not the Goodell, I just think a civil complaint alone, I don't know if that's enough to justify putting somebody on the list.
You know, so a civil complaint alone might not be enough. And then there's this issue of consistency, right? Like, as you point out in your piece, the league did not suspend Tyreek Hill, despite evidence that he threatened his fiancée, but it did suspend Ezekiel Elliott, despite the fact that he was not charged with a crime. So knowing that, how consistent is the league when it comes to dealing with domestic violence and sexual assault?
Yeah, on the surface, it doesn't seem very consistent. Now, the league, I think, will push back and say, we know more than both of you guys, right? That the league has met with the accusers in some cases, has found other evidence that they find telling, that Goodell reviews a thorough record, that Goodell doesn't punish anyone until after a long time because he's carefully going through the facts and the allegations. I don't know if that's true, but the league could argue that the reason why it seems to be inconsistent is because the public doesn't have the same level of information that the league has.
All right, so finally, as a quick follow, that said, when you look at the domestic violence and sexual assault policy that the NBA, for instance, and the NBA Players Association have developed, and to compare that with what the NFL has, how different are the two of them?
Well, for one, there is a policy, and there's a specific policy that allows, though the league has an interpretation of the conduct policy for domestic violence and sexual assault matters, it's not a standalone policy. like the NBA has with its Players Association. And there's really a set of protocols that the NBA and their union have come up with in terms of meeting with experts, in terms of providing information. There's this sort of an orderly process, whereas with the NFL, it's much more up to Goodell. And even the commissioner's exempt list, that it's evolved into this mechanism that I don't think it was originally intended for. It's now evolved into, if there's an accusation that's somewhat credible, perhaps, of domestic violence or sexual assault, the commissioner reserves the right but doesn't have to put somebody on a list. There's a lot more ambiguity to it, and maybe in the next NFL CBA, this isn't just the NFL, it's also the union, right? It takes two to tango. Maybe in the next CBA they come up with something better.
And then I'll finally ask you this about the lawsuit in terms of a timeline. What kind of a timeline are we looking at in terms of this lawsuit and how it proceeds?
And Jim, it could take a while. I mean, a federal lawsuit can take months. This is not going to be, unless they agree out of court to settle the case, which would involve him paying her money. Absent, and it doesn't sound like he's willing to do that. Absent that, this will take months. This is in the federal courts. This is behind the line of other cases. It's not going to get preferential treatment because it involves a star NFL player. It's going to be in the order in which it's received, and we're looking at a case that could certainly go into next year.
As expected, Michael McCann breaking it all down. He is a Sports Illustrated legal analyst and a writer. He is also an attorney. He is the founding director of the Sports and Entertainment Law Institute at the University of New Hampshire and the co-author of the Oxford Handbook of American Sports Law. Michael, thank you so much and great to have you back on.
Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Thank you very much. Michael, have a great day and I appreciate your information and insight.